This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I am very pleased to bring in the ESPN and marquee color analyst and also baseball expert, my good friend and former great ball player for the Cubs and many other teams, Rick Sutcliffe, joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Rick.
I'm not having any troubles with our connection, but I got to tell you, I'm in a little bit of shock right now, Bruce.
And that is?
Well, I tuned in a little bit earlier just to make sure everything was connected and all, and I heard a commercial on 670 The Score, and I believe it was you singing.
Well, I do take requests, so if there is anything that you're interested in, I can guarantee you it will not sound very good, but it will get people's attention. And so, for instance, on the Jeff Vukovich Nationwide Insurance ad, I sing.
Oh, it's outstanding, other than the singing part. I mean, I loved it all, but I mean, have you listened to it?
I've been doing that ad for probably about 15 years, so... He seems to still be in business and doing quite well, so it's working out.
And I'm just glad you didn't start off the introduction with me with replaying part of that song we did, Men in Blue, back in 84. So we'll call it even and go from there, buddy.
It's a long, long time since 1945. Come on, Sud, I'm starting you out. I'm starting you up. You know all the words still, don't you? It was a bad song then, but it's one to remember. Rick Sutcliffe joining us in Inside the Clubhouse as Matt Spiegel works on some technical issues. Sut and I will continue the conversation here. First and foremost, Sut, a tip of the hat to you, and talk about your idea that you're going to be donating your salary from ESPN to the baseball startup this year. Where did that emanate, and what's the idea behind what you plan on doing this year? Because it's a significant amount of money in six figures.
You know, Bruce, as everybody knows in this day and age, and we're hopefully getting closer to getting back to whatever the new norm will be, there's a lot of people that are hurting right now. And we all know it from our family and from our friends, and we're all doing everything we possibly can. You know, it's one thing to write a check. It's one thing to make a donation. But as you know from the time that we met and spent in Chicago and the things that I basically have done throughout my career and even continue today, I learned a long time ago when I was at an event when I played for the Cleveland Indians. It was for the Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I was at the event. Just when I started out with the Dodgers, I got paid to do things like that. And as I went to Cleveland, I was making enough money that I didn't need that, but I still enjoyed it. And I remember at the end of this picnic, there's about 30 kids out there playing. The adults were there, and they were sitting around a table crying. And I said, "What's wrong?" They said, "Well, this is the last event for these kids." And I, "Why?" I said, well, we need $5,000 to continue it, and we don't have it. And at that time, Bruce, I didn't have it either. But I learned at that time from the head guy when he told me, he said, Rick, 5 minutes of your time to these kids will always be worth more than $5,000 of your dollars. It's one thing to write a check. It's one thing to, you know, financially help people when you can, which is what we're going to try to do if we get back to playing baseball at some point, which I honestly believe we will. But it's another, and it's more important for the time that you spend. And, you know, when we look around today at the nurses and the doctors and the first responders and the food lines, there's a lot of people that are becoming bigger and bigger heroes in our eyes than anybody ever, I don't think, realized. You know, for somebody to call a baseball player a hero, I don't think they'll ever do that again. They shouldn't.
We're going to reestablish my partner here. Matt Spiegel joins us back on Inside the Clubhouse. Took a little break, had some coffee. Our great technical people worked it out. Matt, let me reintroduce you to our good friend Rick Sutcliffe.
Well, I was actually listening to Bruce's greatest hits. So he does a tremendous job. That's a really short
45.
Oh, man, you hear him do Brandy by Looking Glass. He just absolutely kills that one. nice to talk to you, Rick. We've referenced a lot that 1981 season in terms of the big break that had to be in the middle because of the strike, and then when you guys ramped it back up and they kicked things off with the All-Star game. And I'm wondering if you can tell people what that was like a little bit, as you had this big pause and then had to kind of get your pitching shoulder and your elbow, get the whole mechanism back warmed up and ready to go. What was that challenge like?
Well, Matt, it's great to be with you as well. And as I have said before, the template for what could be done, once we get the okay from the medical people that it's safe to go back and in some shape or form play the game of baseball on the field, whether it's with fans or what have you. The template is there from what happened in 1981. Now, obviously, the circumstances are a lot different. We were out for 50-some days. A lot of the players didn't think we were coming back to play. So I'll be honest with you. I went to the Lake of the Ozarks down in Missouri. I learned to water ski. Baseball was kind of, you know, one of the last things you thought about back then. That's not the case now. Everybody right now is doing everything they can. Yeah, we were at the halfway point of spring training. The pitchers were all geared up. Guys were going 4 and 5 innings. They were close. They could have gone out and pitched in a major league game at that point. To shut it down and then fire it back up is going to be a lot more difficult than what it was back in 81 when everybody had 50-some games under their belt. But I just think, even though a lot of things about it aren't right and it's impossible to recreate a full season, I think back to, you know, we played 57 games. The Dodgers won the first half. In the second half, we played 53 games. The Astros won. So the Dodgers played the Astros in the playoffs. Well, the team overall that had the best record in that division was the Cincinnati Reds. They went home. There was no postseason for them. So even back then, it wasn't perfect, but we were able to have a pennant race, kind of like the NASCAR sprint race that they do at the end of the year, and you know, with the NASCAR. But we had a chase towards the end, and then we had a playoff, and then we had a World Series, and we had a champion. We turned the page and we went on to 1982. We came back and we started with the All-Star game. I don't know. I don't know if that's what Major League Baseball is thinking about. But if you want to bring the fans back to the game, whether it be on TV or in person, why wouldn't you come back with the best thing you have to offer? And for baseball, as we all know, if it's not the World Series, it's the All-Star game.
Yeah, that's a great point. Rick Sutcliffe joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes from his place in San Diego. Matt Spiegel, Bruce Levine, joining you on Inside the Clubhouse every week from 9 to 11, 52 weeks out of the year. Sut, you know, going back just a little bit to spring training, what did you see out of the Chicago Cubs that we all had a, you know, drop on March the 12th and 13th and everybody eventually heading home? What did you see from that team, from that pitching staff, from that group of guys, because you're there every day during the entire spring training, just watching and having much more than a announcer's point of view or viewpoint, but an inside-out point of view being in there every day?
I think the number one thing, Bruce, that we all felt was the presence of David Ross. I'll be honest with you. I've done a lot of speaking gigs, as you have, Matt. You've done the same thing. I don't think there's a tougher gig I've ever heard of than getting up in front of a Major League Baseball organization, in front of the president and the owners, and being clear and being positive and having a point. I even prayed for David Ross because I know how tough it is. I've seen Lasorda and I've seen Bochy. I've seen some guys that were really good at it. I've seen some guys that weren't. And you just didn't know what it was going to be like for David. Yeah, I've heard him on the air. He's terrific with ESPN when we were partners. I mean, he knocked it out of the park. I mean, he was absolutely perfect in everything he said. He was honest. He let the players know he was going to be honest with them. So there was a different tone right from the very beginning. There was an anger in the guy's eyes about the way the season ended last year. And a lot of people have asked me, and we were going to talk a lot about it during the season, about letting Joe Maddon go, and all of a sudden it was David Ross's opportunity. Guys, I think back to like 1977, 78, when I was in AAA, and I was on a pitching staff at one time with Fernando Valenzuela, Bob Welch, Ted Power, Dave Stewart. I was on a AAA rotation with a lot of ability.
Wow.
And a lot of guys, Bruce, as you know, we had nowhere to go because the Dodgers Major League staff was loaded. I mean, they had Don Sutton, they had Bert Hooten, Tommy John, Andy. I mean, it went on and on. They had an outstanding rotation, nowhere for us to go. Well, in baseball, when you've dominated at the AAA level, the big league team has to find a spot for you. And to me, that's what happened. I believe Joe Maddon may go on. I hope he goes on to be a Hall of Fame manager. But it was time. If you're going to use David Ross at any point, you had to use him now. It had to be now. His time. He was ready. He had spent enough time preparing for this that it was his time. And I just think it was absolutely the right move. I talked to Joe a lot in spring training. Everything is all good and done. Joe was happy there. And I know that the Cubs made the right hire in bringing Rossi back in uniform.
Well, love to hear you talk about him that way, Rick, because people, they enjoyed the, cute, cuddly idea of Grandpa Rossi. But what you're talking about is what the Cubs have always known about him, what they were missing about him in the clubhouse from the moment he left after 2016. They were lacking it. And it's that I've been trying to figure out how to talk about it. Maybe you can help. He's got like that mix of accountability but likability. Like, yeah. He's like, you want to please him, and you're afraid not to please him. Like, he just kind of has that natural sort of secret sauce. Did Lasorda have that, or did Bochy have that, other guys that you've seen? And what is, how can I help describe that for people?
You know, Lasorda would go off, from time to time, and he would pick his moments. You'll remember Tommy used to go out and coach third to try to get the team going offensively. Well, the genius of Lasorda back then was that when he would go to coach third, it was normally when the opposing team had the worst starting pitcher they had. So it was always going to look like, boy, Tommy, boy, he's amazing how he's a – he never coached third when Tom Seaver was on the mound or Steve Carlson. You know, Bruce Bochy, you always knew that was there, and you were afraid of it. You didn't want to challenge Boch because you were going to lose in a situation like that. I go back to two things, and you guys have heard me on ESPN, and you will again on Marquee. There were two things to me that turned the Cubs organization around. Yeah, they brought Theo in. Yeah, there was a lot of different managers. But there were two situations in uniform. One was when Aroldis Chapman threw behind Nate Scherholz, and Anthony Rizzo put the glove down in Cincinnati and challenged the whole team. Enough's enough. All right, we stink. You're better than we are. But you know what? It's over. You're not bullying us anymore. Let's go. Let's get it on. The other situation was David Ross's first spring. Grandpa Rossi comes to camp. Everybody loves him. He's funny. You look at, Bruce, you were there a lot in the clubhouse. There's, 10 guys around Rossi's locker. Everybody's laughing, having a good time. And then all of a sudden, right before we played our first game, we went over to Sloan Park, and we were going through infield drills. And Starlin Castro was our shortstop, and Starlin was being Starlin. He really didn't care about being there. He wasn't putting everything into it. He was going through the motions. David Ross took his mask off. He got in Castro's face, said, "That's why you guys are, I mean, I can't use the words, that's why you're losers, that's why you haven't won, and if you keep going at it like this, you're not going to win. And if you're going to play like this, then you need to get out of here." And he literally sent him from Sloan Park, the stadium, back to the minor league complex. And it wasn't only did Castro take notice, you know, eventually he got moved from shortstop to, he was a utility player, then he played second. He made some great contributions, and he was a great offensive player. Mm-hmm. He was an all-star several times, but the reason for that was because they were a bad team and you had to have an all-star. The point being, David Ross set the tone on what he was like and how important the game of baseball was and how it was supposed to be played. So he set that tone back probably the third week that he was in a Cub uniform. So Theo had that to go on. He knew that that was there. And, of course, it came out again this spring, and it will again as soon as we get back to playing.
The Red Baron, Rick Sutcliffe, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. And, Sut, we could do 2 hours with you every week. That's how much fun you are and how interesting you are. Let's take you back to 1984, 1989. We lost Jim Frey, the manager, and then eventually the GM of that 1989 team this week. Jim, 89, passed away. That 1984 season was, something I'll never forget. As much as the 2016 season was unique and certainly historic and something Cub fans will always remember, to me, like, 84 was a coming out for the Chicago Cub organization. Getting a winner in Dallas Green, getting a winner in Jim Frey, getting winning players like yourself in that June 15th trade that year that sent Joe Carter and Mel Hall to the Cleveland Indians, and that turnaround and that team. Your thoughts about Jim Frey and his impact on that club as well?
Well, Bruce, the first word that comes to mind is a man that was dedicated. He dedicated basically his whole life to the game of baseball. He was a high school teammate with Zimmer. He never made it to the big leagues. He played a lot of years at the minor league level. Matt, we know what that's like. It's not a great life. There's a lot of travel. There's very little money involved. He never made it to the big leagues. So as he got into his second career, he was a scout. And then all of a sudden he was a coach, and he became a manager, a general manager. He became a vice president. He was dedicated to the game of baseball. But I think maybe one thing a lot of people didn't know, Bruce, we knew it from being around him a lot, this guy was hilarious. This guy, when he would get with Zim or somebody, one of his old cronies, they would start talking about baseball stories. Jim had a way of just even embellishing a story if he had to entertain. He was terrific. I ran into him a few years later after he had gotten fired as the GM, and we were in New York, I think, maybe Baltimore, and I said, "Jim, what are you up to?" And he said, "Well, I'm still getting paid." He goes, I'm the vice president." I go, "Oh, great." And he goes, "Not really." He goes, "They told me that I was the vice president in charge of Baltimore." And he said, "They told me if we need anything from you about Baltimore, we'll call." And he said, "It's been a year and a half, and not one person has called me." But, you know, that was his sense of humor. He wasn't bitter about anything. People give Rhino and they give myself and Sarge and a lot of guys a lot of credit for what went on in 84. But as you said, along with Dallas Green, there should be a statue of Dallas Green, in my opinion, outside of Wrigley Field. Because for those of you that are listening now, and those of you that don't, go back and look it up. Go back and check out the 1983 season for the Chicago Cubs. Dallas Green was the one that put it all together, and he put the pieces to that puzzle together in 84, and a big, big piece of that puzzle, as we know, was Jim Frey.
Yep. Hey, Sut, what does it feel like to be rolling the way you were rolling? I remember, watching Jake Arrieta in 2015 and seeing that kind of Bob Gibson-esque run that he was on. But, I mean, you, once you become a Cub, at 16-1 with an ERA under 3, what was the confidence like? What was different about you, if anything, during that stretch?
Well, Matt, I think the biggest thing was just that I was with a better team. I was with the Dodgers in 81, even with the strike and all. The team went on to win the World Series. I won the ERA title in 82. I won 18 games. It was an all-star in 83. In 84, I got off to kind of a rough start, but you go back and look at the players, and I'm not knocking anybody. You get to the big leagues, you're amazing. But the team I had behind me in Cleveland was nothing like what I had when I came to Chicago. And I remember Don Drysdale telling me when I got traded there, he goes, hey, it's different now. He goes, it's not like you're going to be locked up in a one-to-one game after seven innings. He goes, take the mound knowing you're going to get four runs or more every single game. And what he talked about was being more aggressive and throwing more strikes and not worrying about a solo home run here and there. That's what turned me around then, and I'll be honest with you. That's exactly the conversation I had with Jake Arrieta before the 2015 season. I saw him pitch in Baltimore. I saw a guy with a lot of ability, but I saw a guy that didn't trust his stuff, that wasn't as aggressive as he should have been. He came over. Obviously, Theo and the scouts saw that. Obviously, Chris Bosio had a lot to do with it. But it was Jake Arrieta that just realized that the team behind him was better than the one that he came from, and because of that, he became better, as I did.
In closing with you, Sut, tomorrow on Hit and Run, our Sunday show that Matt hosts, he will have Greg Maddux on that show. Now, are there any stories that you can tell on the radio about Greg Maddux and clean it up? Or, I mean, are there any stories that, you know, you can tell about him as a teammate that are funny but still good enough to go on the radio?
I'd have to say, Bruce, the one with Andre Dawson, when he got hit by Eric Schau. Yeah. A lot of people know I charged the mound from the dugout. I wasn't even in a game. I got suspended for 10 days. Everybody knows what happened there. But what people don't realize, I know you do, Bruce, because you were there. Matt, you probably remember. Greg Maddux was pitching that game. At that point, I think he was like 5-15. I mean, he was told that after that game, if he didn't pitch well, he was going back to the minors. We had a big lead, and Greg was supposed to go out there for the top of the fifth to pick up a victory, a win. And I don't know, we were like 11-3 or something like that. And the umpires are yelling at me that I've been kicked out. I got to go. I got to leave the dugout. And I went up to Greg and I said, hey, listen, you do whatever you want in the sixth inning. But I'm telling you right now, go out there and get three outs, get the win. And then in the sixth inning, if you want to hit somebody, you do what you want to do. And he looked at me and he said, no, I'm hitting the first guy. And I said, hey, I'm in charge around here. You know that. I'm telling you what to do. You're not. He says, with tears in his eyes, he goes, Sut, I don't care if I ever get another win. I'm hitting the first guy. And I argued with him. It didn't do any good. He went out there, and I'm telling you, it was 95 miles an hour. He stuck it right in the middle of Benito Santiago's back. That's the type of teammate Greg Maddux was from the very beginning, and that's a teammate he was to the very end. I'll tell you another real quick story. He's 5-15. We can't figure it out. All of a sudden, a guy hit what should have been a stand-up triple, and he stopped at second base. And Dick Pohl looked at me, and he said, did you see that? And I went, yeah. I go, what's going on? He goes, let's go take a look when the game's over. We went up and looked at video from the center field camera. Greg Maddux was tipping every pitch that he threw. You know, to throw a changeup, you got to have your glove wider than you do with a fastball. That base runner stopped at second base because he wanted to give the signs to the hitter. If he got to third base, he wasn't going to be able to do that. Once Greg Maddux heard about that, he eventually was able to turn it around. He would put a changeup grip in his glove, and he'd let the base runner at second base relay it to the hitter. And then as he started his delivery, his stretch, he would change it to a fastball and just totally, totally mess up the opponent. That was the end of that. And, of course, what was it, 355 wins later, Mr. Maddux is at Cooperstown.
We really appreciate it, Sut. It was a great 24 minutes with you. I know we could do this for hours. We're going to be looking forward to your contributions again on ESPN and Marquee Network. And we hope to have you on a regular basis because nobody tells stories, nobody more interesting than Rick Sutcliffe. Thanks for taking some time out today.
Well, buddy, do me one more favor. Just sing a little bit of that jingle with me before I go.
Nationwide is on your side. JeffBook.com is on your side.
I had no idea.
Yeah, man. You guys have a great weekend. Matty, take care.
All right.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world.
Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.